Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, telling stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character for over 50 years. Details at texancultures.utsa.edu.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. This weekend, just about every cell phone in Bexar County rang out with an alert. It was an emergency tone with a text that urged all San Antonio residents to stay home as the city recorded its highest number of cases in a single day. And this was brand new. This has not happened before. And it's the latest effort to communicate to everyone here that COVID-19 is serious and we need to work together to try to limit the spread. What did you think when you got that emergency alert? What more do you think needs to happen in order to protect our communities from the spread of coronavirus? You can call in. The number is 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. We're joined this half hour by Gilbert Garcia, the Metro columnist for the San Antonio Express News. Gilbert Garcia, welcome back to The Source.
Thank you.
Also with us is Dr. Jan Patterson, infectious disease specialist at the Long School of Medicine at UT Health San Antonio. Dr. Jan Patterson, welcome to The Source.
Thank you.
A lot of people are watching the number of beds that we have, ICU beds that we have at our local hospitals. They're concerned as the numbers of confirmed cases of coronavirus here in Bexar County go up. Are you able to give us an update on how things look with our ICU beds?
Well, right now we have about 265 of the 800, actually now today, almost 900 patients hospitalized in ICUs. I know from talking with ICU providers over the weekend that they are reaching capacity in the ICUs. So it's a very serious situation. Overall, we had about 20% capacity, bed capacity in the hospitals, but capacity is less than that in our ICUs. So it's a serious situation.
Also, when we talk about capacity, this is a word I struggle with because we can add more. It's not a hard capacity, correct? They're working to, like, a field virus hospital is in the works at the Joe Freeman Coliseum.
Yes, they're looking at all alternate sites, including a field hospital. But, Dave, the thing to remember is that with those kinds of settings, we can't provide the kind of care that we usually do provide in acute care hospitals. So those are basically makeshift settings, and yes, they can give us some more beds, but we cannot provide the standard of care that we usually provide in our acute care hospital. So that's just something to keep in mind.
So when you say capacity, as we reach capacity, that means that we are reaching the limit of being able to provide the highest standard of care that you would typically expect at an ICU unit at our area hospitals.
That's right. And it's not just ICU care. I mean, you know, these additional beds, you know, can be provided and staffed in those kinds of settings. But it's not the typical setting that we would have in our hospitals, even in the non-ICU setting. So, you know, it's a makeshift. And we can do some good with those beds. We can provide beds in that way, but it's not our usual standard of care.
So we should be focusing on trying to do everything we can to prevent the spread of COVID-19. So if things continue in the pattern that we're in right now, we will hit that limit by what, mid-July, earlier?
Well, it could be the second week in July. It could potentially, depending on the curve, it could even be, you know, toward the end of the first week in July. So basically, you know, we're at a rate right now where we're doubling every week. Right now, there's about 900 COVID patients in the hospital. So that would mean 2,000 next week, 4,000 the week after that. And that is really approaching our bed capacity in the area. And so you know, that doesn't count all the other people that need to be in the hospital. You know, we haven't stopped having heart attacks, strokes, car accidents. So, you know, that's really why we're at a critical juncture where the community needs to respond, because it's really only the community that can stop this momentum right now.
But the people who will be in ICU in 2 weeks, these people have COVID right now. They may not know it. They may be in incubation, but they've already contracted it. Is that right?
That's logically true. So if we, you know, changed our behavior today, it would take, you know, a week to stop seeing new cases, and it would take 2 weeks to stop seeing the hospitalizations, because typically it's the second week where, you know, people become sick enough to get admitted to hospital.
Gilbert Garcia, Metro columnist for the San Antonio Express News. So you wrote about this recently, about how Governor Greg Abbott is reversing course. They reopened mm-hmm. Texas, and now they're slowing the reopening and closing some things down. So this is this what you see as the results of those policies?
Well, I think that, you know, certainly personal responsibility is you know, a huge factor in all of this. But I think it's no coincidence that if we look at three of the states that are seeing the really big spikes right now in the numbers, Florida, Texas, and Arizona, they all have states where they had governors who I think were in a hurry to reopen the economies again. They had faced pressure from their political base to do that. Greg Abbott essentially created a stay-at-home order that went into effect at the beginning of April. And by the end of April, he was beginning the process of opening up businesses again. On May 22nd, I think it was, he reopened bars, which even he has conceded was probably a mistake. And he phased in allowing more people greater capacity at some businesses. We've moved up to 75% in restaurants. And so I think that, and of course, he's also stood in the way of mask mandates on the local level. He allowed for a loophole that County Judge Nelson Wolf found a couple of weeks ago, where he imposed a local mandate on businesses rather than individuals. But even that was something that you know, Nelson Wolf had to kind of find on his own, and the governor had stood in the way of local communities imposing mask mandates. So I think that I think the governor has now seen this incredible spike in the numbers in the last couple of weeks, and had really no reasonable course that he could take other than to kind of phase back or reverse the opening of the economy that he had started.
So they're having to confront the reality of the spread of the virus, which really doesn't bow to political pressure. It is what it is.
That's right. And I mean, I think, you know, we had, I think, 108 people in the San Antonio area hospitalized with COVID-19 less than 3 weeks ago. And now, you know, we're in around 900. And statewide, we're seeing similar things happen. So what he has done now is to shut down bars again and to temporarily ban tubing and rafting, and also reduce capacity of restaurants to 50%. I mean, one of the things that we've seen sure. with this latest spike is that younger people are starting, in greater numbers, are now starting to contract COVID-19.
Right.
And so his effort seems to be directed toward that.
All right. We'll be talking more about what's happening with young people. Why are they being blamed by some of our leaders, saying they're the ones that are spreading and are responsible for the spike? And what did you think when you got that emergency alert? The number is 833-TPR-TALK. Clint, hang on. I'll get you on the air right after this. 833-877-8255. Back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. In the next half hour, we'll be joined by Texas House Speaker Dennis Bonin to talk about why conservatives should be wearing a mask. And you can call in. The number is 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. We asked, what did you think when you got that emergency alert from the city of San Antonio on your smartphone telling you, stay home? We're now Clint has called in to talk about that. And Clint, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, Dave. My wife and I were sitting on the patio when we got the alert, and it was pretty alarming. We feel like it might have the potential to diminish the effectiveness of the system because it's confusing that we would get an imminent emergency alert similar to a tornado warning, but we still have the ability to go out and buy furniture or go to a restaurant and eat. So it was just a little bit confusing and alarming.
Did it not communicate to you that things are really getting serious, that this is at that level of a hurricane, except it's a virus?
It did, and that's what's confusing, because that alert was very effective, and it alerted us and alarmed us highly. But the fact that then we could leave from our house voluntarily and go out to eat, it just kind of makes it seem like the system might be diminished in that way to me.
Clint, thank you so much for calling in and giving us that take. I really do appreciate that. So Dr. Jan Patterson, infectious disease specialist at the Long School of Medicine at UT Health San Antonio. Did you get that alert, emergency alert? What did you think of it?
Yes, and actually I thought it was a really good idea. I mean, the caller's correct in that it's different than the kind of emergency of, you know, something that you're going to experience in the next hour or so. But the thing about this is, as we were just discussing, it takes a week or two for this momentum to change. So it's the things that we do today, you know, the behavior that we do today that is going to affect things. And it takes that long for things to be affected. So it really is an emergency for us to, you know, change our behavior today. And I think, you know, as far as the reopening, I think that a lot of emphasis could have been given to reopening safely, you know, to wearing a mask and face covering and still doing the physical distancing as much as possible as we go about our daily lives. It's not business as usual. You know, yes, we want to see businesses open and those kinds of things, but it's not going to be business as usual while we're living with this virus. And it's clear that we have to do that for a while. So, you know, a very simple thing such as a face or mask covering, you know, can help do this safely. And I think that a lot of emphasis on that could have helped us as we were reopening.
Gilbert Garcia, Metro columnist for the San Antonio Express News. It seems the point that Clint is making is that the city puts out this emergency alert telling people stay home, yet simultaneously all these businesses are open and you can go buy furniture or whatever you like. Now, bars are closed, but still everything else is wide open. And if you go out into the world, you're going to see there's still a lot of traffic out there. People may have gotten that message, and it may have given them, you know, their eyes may have wide open for a second, but then they go back to their activities.
Right. And there is a certain disconnect between what is, you know, the message in that warning and the mandates that we have in the state. But, you know, if you look at the message, I mean, even Governor Abbott is last week was telling people stay home unless you absolutely have to leave. And certainly that's what we've been hearing from local leaders. So that message has been coming from political officials in Texas across the political spectrum over in recent days. But, you know, the issue is that people are allowed to go out, and as you say, certain businesses are open. And I think that if we had our local officials, Mayor Ron Nuremberg and County Judge Nelson Wolf, they had more power over the situation, I think we would have stricter rules or regulations about the businesses that are open. But they're operating under, you know, the situation that the governor has created. And so I think that they felt, or this was coming from the city, so I certainly think that the mayor felt that this was a way of creating a sense of urgency, which has been part of the problem, creating, making enough people see that this is an urgent situation.
Let's go to Beth on the phones. And Beth, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Go ahead, Beth.
Hi. Yes, I have to have a hysterectomy because I have severe bleeding, but I was told by my doctor that it is an elective procedure and that I can no longer have it. In that regards, I wish people would understand you made the choice, you got COVID, then stay home and deal with it. It's part of consequences. You made that choice, and it's a very draconian thought, but it's not fair to people who need surgery and can no longer get it done because you were dumb.
All right. I'm so sorry to hear about your situation, Beth, and hopefully you'll be able to have that worked on. Dr. Jan Patterson, UT Health San Antonio, elective surgeries put on hold. People think it's not just nose jobs and getting things fixed like that. This is serious medicine that cannot be performed, correct?
Yes, that's right. I mean, we're still trying to do things like cancer surgeries and other things like and things like that that are extremely urgent. And I sympathize very much with Beth and her situation. This is indeed a choice that the community makes at large. And that's why we need to change behavior so that we will be able to provide these surgeries for people like Beth who need them.
I have a question from Bonnie. And Bonnie, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I was wondering just how long does the COVID virus last on surfaces?
All right, Dr. Jan Patterson, can you answer Bonnie's question?
Well, that varies depending on the surface. For instance, it lasts not as long on cardboard as it does on metal. But, you know, one thing that we've learned, and as we've learned a lot of things over the last 3 or 4 months with this virus, we were initially very concerned about fomite spread, that is from spread from surfaces. And it's still important to disinfect high-touch surfaces frequently, things like doorknobs and handles and things like that. But we've learned that the spread primarily occurs by the respiratory route. So it's having a face-to-face conversation with someone without masks. That is really the risk here. Touching a surface that someone else has just touched, and that's where the hand hygiene comes in. So the disinfection of surfaces is still important, but we think that, using a mask or face covering and frequent hand hygiene are even more important than the surface disinfection.
So handshakes are still a no-no?
That's correct.
Gilbert Garcia, in the middle of all this, we learned that we got a resignation from Don Emmerich, who was the head of San Antonio Metropolitan Health. She will remain on the job till the end of the week or till July 1st. Had you seen this coming? What have you heard about this?
Well, you know, I think that she has pointed out that people who had talked to her and were in daily contact with her were probably not surprised. I think it was a surprise to many of us, but she came from Oregon, 5 months ago to take this job, and stepped into an incredibly stressful situation. I mean, it was just a matter of weeks between her coming to San Antonio and finding that we're in the middle of this crisis. I think, as she's pointed out, she really never really got to experience the city of San Antonio under normal circumstances because we were in shutdown mode very quickly, and so. I know that she's pointed out on social media and so on that she, in interviews, that she hadn't been getting much sleep. She was, I think, overwhelmed by that. So I think that that was a big factor. I think one of the interesting things, too, is that she's also pointed out that that a concern that she had when she took the job and that she has now is that she feels like, this job should go to a woman of color. And I think that she felt that was an important thing for the city to do. So I think it was just she was dealing with a lot and really never got a chance to be a Metro Health Director in the usual sense of that term because she was dealing with a crisis the whole time.
So the exit of Don Emmerich and now Colleen Bridger, who did have the job, who had been promoted to assistant city manager, she will take over these responsibilities as interim Metro Health Director. Is this going to have some sort of interruption in the ability to respond to COVID-19?
I would say no, and I think Colleen Bridger has been, even in her capacity as assistant city manager, has been very involved in this issue. But she had planned and has planned to leave city government herself to go into the private consulting business. So I don't know if she's going to stay on a little longer under these circumstances. One of the interesting things is there's been talk within, city government about the possible need to maybe have a second person, to have a COVID-19 czar in the city government dealing exclusively with this because it is so overwhelming and it's hard for a Metro Health Director to deal with that job in addition to what we're dealing with now.
I'm going to get Chip on the line. Chip, thanks for calling in. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, my question is this. In a hot car interior in San Antonio, would it be possible to sterilize a mask by hanging it from, say, a rearview mirror?
Great question. That's something that we all can do. Hopefully it works. Dr. Jan Patterson, what do you think?
Well, it's true that heat decontamination does work. I will tell you what I do is I put my mask in a paper bag in my car and recycle them using the ones that I used several days ago. I reuse after they've been in the car for several days. And that's because the virus doesn't last that long on those surfaces, and also the heat helps as well. So, I mean, I think hanging it on your rearview mirror is a safe thing to do.
What about the sunlight? That would be the UV rays.
Yeah, the UV rays will help too, yeah. And I would encourage everyone just to handle your mask by the straps when you're putting it on and taking it off, and that way you avoid touching the front of the mask, which is potentially contaminated.
So, Gilbert Garcia, we have early voting starting today. People will be having to vote in person if they have not qualified for vote by mail. We do have the deadline for voting for mail request have to be reached by the county clerk's office by January 2nd. So that's another, you know, mixed message.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I mean, my understanding is at least what we're seeing in Bexar County so far today is, you know, the turnout's kind of low. And it's hard to know at this point how the COVID-19 will affect in-person voting. But I think this, if we're looking longer term, as over the longer view of the COVID-19 pandemic, I think there are also legitimate questions about the fact that Governor Abbott did not use his authority to expand the opportunity for mail-in voting, that he could have allowed for so-called no-excuse applications where people would not have to provide the usual excuses, say being 65 or over or having a disability, and he would allow for the fact that we're in a public health crisis. He did not do that, and so I think we're going to have some issues both now and in November with in-person voting.
And Gilbert Garcia, any signs that our local leadership, city council members, the mayor, are feeling any kind of pressure from their constituents, or do they feel supported that they're leading San Antonio effectively?
Yeah, you know, I think that the limited polling that we've seen on this suggests that the community is there's broad support for the actions that have been taken on the local level to try to keep the community safe. There are certainly loud voices in opposition, and we've seen that elsewhere where, you know, people have objected to wearing masks, have objected to any restrictions on businesses because they think it's an infringement on personal liberty. But I think that overall, I think that there has been support, and I don't think the pressure has been too intense for local leaders.
And Dr. Jan Patterson, infectious disease specialist at the Long School of Medicine, UT Health San Antonio, what do you really want our listeners to take away from you being on the radio today? What do you want them to know?
Well, I think we as a community can stop the spread, and in fact, only we can do that. And the way to do that is to use a mask or face covering when you're in public, to continue to socially distance as much as possible, and use frequent hand hygiene. It's all in our hands.
All right, Dr. Jan Patterson, thank you for joining us. Infectious disease specialist at the Long School of Medicine at UT Health San Antonio. Gilbert Garcia, Metro columnist for the San Antonio Express News. Always good to have you on. When we come back from this break, we'll be joined by Texas House Speaker Dennis Bonin. He's going to be talking about conservative values and wearing a mask and how that can help keep the Texas economy strong. You can call in. The number is 833-877. 877-8255 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us.